Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number one. Today, we're going to start out with the topic of Bloomberg's anti-gun lobby. We've got Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, Lydia Tabbitt, and Kirk Pettis. And of course, I'm Matt Winter. I think when we start out today with this Bloomberg anti-gun lobby, essentially, I just want to start out by saying that I think that Bloomberg is going to reach his hands out into every part of every state and try to push as hard as he can. One of the things very recently that I've been getting lobbied about has been the fact that they're going to start putting another magazine capacity bill together for the state of Minnesota. They're going to be bringing back just a few of the registration laws that they would like to pass at a national level. I personally think there's not going to be much drive for that in the state of Minnesota, just because there's the DFL in this state is actually a pretty pro-gun DFL, and that's just because the outstate Minnesota DFL, the Iron Rangers, they're all hunters, and they tend to be pretty pro-gun. But I find it interesting that you've got essentially a billionaire who's wanting to throw all the money he's got behind disarming the population and trying to limit firearm ownership when it's such a fundamental right.
So, like, why would he want to do that? Oh, excuse me.
I don't really have much of a comment on why Bloomberg would want to do that. He's got his own motivations. It's more concerned about what we can do to, or what could be prevented as far as what he's going to try to do in all these other states.
Matt, I'm a little confused about this Bloomberg law. Is he actually a part of this Minnesota magazine law that they're trying to pass, or
is this sponsoring,
just related to New York, or?
No, he's sponsoring bills that are in the state of Minnesota now. His Bloomberg anti-gun lobby is lobbying in the state of Minnesota to try to pass laws to restrict magazine size and do universal registration in this state.
Yeah, it looks like I'm looking at a Wikipedia article on this, and looks like he founded the group in August 2009 with a $3 million contribution. And it's primarily there's 1,000 plus members who are primarily Democrats who are a part of this group. And it's essentially a gun control lobby.
So Kirk, you're asking,
do you think this has a, you know, good chance of passing in Minnesota, or?
I don't. I think it's probably going to get knocked down. However, there's other states where we've already seen these types of laws pass, which is very unfortunate. The state of California has so many laws that Smith and Wesson.
I heard about that. Ruger, I think.
It's a Ruger, yeah. Smith and Wesson and Ruger both have said they will not sell firearms in that state anymore. It's all of their firearms, because they enacted a new bill that says that they have to micro print on the cases of the bullets a serial number, which it's a defeatist thing. Somebody is going to commit a crime with one of these firearms can just simply disable that functionality on the firearm, and they're going to be able to use it, and it's still not going to mark the casing. It's essentially legislation without understanding technology, and that's, you know, to me it seems like a major problem.
Well, I think the reason why they brought that up is, you know, so if someone commits a crime, you know, they at least see like a number imprinted on like the bullet or something. But, you know, that I think most of these crimes are, you know, people are like stealing other people's weapons anyway, so it's like it's hard to like catch these criminals. So yeah, I agree. It's like on this law. So
right, legislation for the sake of legislation to make people feel good is never a good thing.
Or is it right? Legislation really for a larger initiative, which is gun control?
Well, I think you're right about that, Eric. There's probably going to be some element of that always, where they're going to cling on to whatever they can to, so that they have something to go back to their base who's donating to them and say, look at what we got done, even though they don't understand that it's completely ineffective. So, essentially, I'm thinking that there's going to be some serious debate that's going to come up about this in the state of Minnesota in the future here, and in the national level. And I do believe that we're seeing them get stopped just based on all the organizations that are out there right now. For instance, there's GOKRA in the state of Minnesota, the NRA. GOKRA is where I heard about the issues that are going on right now. That lobby has actually become quite strong. I'm surprised by that, because I assumed that the folks here in the state would probably just say that the NRA would be strong enough, but GOKRA has actually turned into a very influential organization, and that's a good thing. I think that's awesome. I certainly think they've benefited this state. So,
well, I think this could be a little testing ground to see how much influence they can pull out of the cities, because I think rural Democrats will not go for anything like this. I mean, I think rural Minnesota is largely Democratic, but it's along the Democratic Party. But if you look at Colorado, when they passed these sweeping gun laws, which I relate Minnesota and Colorado very closely, and they had a huge backlash against them. And, you know, they're throwing politicians out of office and whatnot. So I think if they're doing this could be a possible test run to see if, you know, the amount of people inside of a city still can sway that many votes to enact gun control in Minnesota. You know, and there always is the Minnesota Nice, but it'll be... I think Colorado proved that there's a big backlash against, you know, trying to fight against the Second Amendment, especially when hunting is a big factor in Minnesota, just like Colorado.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
So, Matt, do you see this as kind of a, you know, indirect fight against the Second Amendment? Is that really...
Oh, I think it's a... In my opinion, I think it's a direct fight against the Second Amendment. The anti-gun lobby, in my opinion, is always making steps to reduce the amount of freedom there is within the Second Amendment. The original intent was to allow citizens to be able to fight back against the government should they have to. It's a security blanket to enforce the Constitution, and it's obvious at this point that it's a futile battle as far as you know, you're not going to see citizens owning anti-tank missiles at any point in the near future, but how
about a militia? The Second Amendment
absolutely
calls for a militia as well, and that's never talked about.
Well, it's a well-regulated militia, which is that's a citizen band of soldiers, which I think they essentially at this point the Second Amendment's been overlapped as far as the militia goes. That people use that to be the army, which it's, obviously the National Guard is the army, the Navy, the Marines. It's not what the intent of that amendment was. However, I don't know that the requirement is still the same as what it was. I think what's more important now is just ensuring that we're not going to see knee-jerk reactions to news stories, which is what it seems like happened in Colorado. I think in Colorado they drew on the Batman movie premiere shooting, and that's how they got the laws passed that they did. They essentially convinced these politicians that they'd be able to garner support from their base based on this emotional reaction. What it turned out is that the people were smart enough to separate reality from fantasy, and they looked at it objectively, and they saw a crazy man with a shotgun, and it was a very unfortunate event, but they separated the individual who owns a firearm from the insane person who is committing the crime. And now, like you said, they're reaping the results of what they sowed.
Yeah, but I don't like the whole insane talk. I think it leads down to new regulation in the future.
it's a slippery slope. So, Eric, I think that you had another topic here for the evening. What did you want to discuss?
Well, let me choose a topic, because I had three marked down. So being that, you know, we're a liberty group here, and one of the topics that I marked down is the State of the Liberty Movement. So over the last couple of years, you know, you had 2008 to 2012, we've had some pretty good momentum within the movement, and we had people that are still participating, and some, you know, because of the fact that this is, you know, most people who are involved in the Liberty Movement are in the Republican Party. A lot of them, some have dropped out. And I think even, you know, there are certain individuals that we know who said, you know, at this, you know, this whole political process doesn't really, you know, doesn't accomplish, you know, much constructive outcomes, many constructive outcomes. So that's kind of the topic that I had as the first one. So I don't know what everyone's thoughts are on that.
I think that the Liberty Movement in general gained a lot of steam with the Ron Paul campaign. I thought that you saw a lot of people come out because they saw somebody who they could get behind. I think the spirit of liberty, the libertarian philosophy, has been out there for a long time. However, there wasn't a real solidifying individual to get behind. There wasn't a real figurehead. Exactly, Lydia. Thank you.
No problem.
And having somebody like that to bring everybody together is what it really took. And I think you see a lot of people capitalizing on that reason.
No, Eric, can you reiterate your topic again? It was
just kind of the State of the Liberty Movement, where we've been, where we're at, you know, where it's going. You know, you have Ron Paul, that he's kind of out of the political process. So
well,
a lot of
back
people
in
have,
now,
but have really become disengaged because of that. But they're, you know, he certainly laid a good foundation to move forward, you know, move forward from. So, you know, that has to do that, you know, possible areas that touches are, you know, the political process, civil rights process, you know, privacy area, that type of thing. That's the general gist of that topic.
Well, I think people should understand how our group formed. Was all of us were pretty active in the last presidential primary campaign, and we formed, you know, that's what made us lead to this group. And so we went through the whole process and saw the in and outs, the inner workings and whatnot. And I came to the process just fed up with the whole political system. I wanted to be involved, and I didn't know much about Ron Paul before I even wanted to be involved. And then that led me to Ron Paul, and that exactly how you guys say it was a coalescing factor, and we all came together over his figurehead. And we did very well in Minnesota, and it was, I just wish we had something more liberty-minded in the political sphere, especially in Minnesota. I think it transcends it to both political parties. No matter who we talk to, all have libertarian leanings, and yet it always seems to be stamped out in political mainstream, and there's something always, a new idea that they perpetrate against us that fades in the wind after the political matters are at hand, but I don't know what you guys think about that.
But it does seem to be a pervasive problem that happens within starting up a new movement, is that it, you can get momentum behind it, and then if you don't see a victory out of it, people start to kind of step back from it a little bit, and they question the amount of time that they're putting in. I think it's obvious that with our organization, that hasn't been the case. We've stuck with it. There's been a lot of interest in the type of discussion groups that we've had over the last, the discussion groups that we've had where we're talking about different libertarian philosophies, getting together with the various groups that we have. I think that overall, we have seen the start of what is a new group that's going to form. I agree that it's found its foundations within the Republican Party, but I think there's some shared interests with the Democrat Party. I think there's some. You would consider the Libertarian group, and in my mind, it's the Libertarian philosophy as being a more common sense, constitution oriented party, without having the religious implications of something like the Constitution Party.
Well, I think you bring up a valid point about that it transcends both parties, because, I mean, Obama, when he was running in 2008, he constantly said everything anyone wants to hear. He talked about freedom, responsibility, lack of, you know, I mean, government in your face. And it turns out to be totally different. And then this recent State of the Union, just the other night, he talked about how he's going to cut red tape left and right just to get things going. And it just shows how government works, where if the friends of the friends, they'll cut the red tape for, but otherwise it's control over everyone else. And I think that is what people are becoming accustomed to, and it's, and therefore is growing the liberty movement at by leaps and bounds. It's just that there's no figurehead like a Ron Paul anymore right now.
Well, because there is.
He was.
Possibly. You know, there's Rand Paul, who's...
So, sorry, go ahead, Eric.
Go ahead.
Hey, guys, I gotta bust out for a little bit, gotta eat some dinner with the family, so I'll try to get back in if you guys are still on, so...
Okay.
Okay,
no problem. Good,
see you guys. All right.
See you, Danny.
Thanks, Danny.
Yep, see ya.
What was I gonna say?
Happy New Year's, Danny!
Eric, did you have something you were going to add?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say that I think if the Liberty Movement is to be successful, I think it's definitely going to be a bottom-up type of organization. It's going to start with grassroots. It's going to start with individuals and networks of people working together, because I think that's the question right now, is that through Ron Paul, you were kind of able to identify one central figurehead, I guess is the word to use, that kind of linked all these different libertarian factions together. And I think right now there's really kind of a question of what that is going to look like. Is there going to be a new kind of central organization of the Liberty Movement, or is it going to be kind of different throughout, or how the Liberty Movement is going to organize going forward, I guess.
So if you see it as being something where it's based on grassroots, mm-hmm. what type of organization do you see happening right now? I mean, aside from our group, what type of organization do you see happening at a more national or even a regional level that would make you think that that's going to be successful in the long term?
Well, I don't know. I guess that's the question I have. I know there's Campaign for Liberty, which is sort of, I know, trying to create some sort of liberty network across the country. I don't really have an opinion on it. I guess maybe that's the way to go. I think. If you're going to make real change, it has to come from the people, and I think it's going to come from the grassroots. But I don't know how you the key is how you organize those groups of people effectively.
And that's you know? Tough to do. There really is.
Yeah.
Campaign for Liberty is trying, but it's almost like herding cats. especially libertarians are very independent, and getting those networks into place is a difficult task.
It's basically how do you organize people that don't want to be organized is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if that can happen, I think the individuals who are, really for libertarianism and the message that it embodies, they could do very well. And we certainly saw that in 2012, right? There was a, there was a figurehead that really galvanized a lot of people. And, even though their numbers were small, the ability to organize and get results was very good.
Mm-hmm.
But now, there seems to be a certain level of apathy now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say that, Eric, about their ability to organize, what was it that allowed them to organize as well as they did? Was it a super talented coordinator at the top, or was it that it resonated as well as it did with people?
You know, I'm not an expert in the area, but my thought is organization and money. The Ron Paul campaign had, they were focused on caucus states where delegates weren't necessarily assigned in primaries. Delegates were assigned through the caucus process, and they're two entirely different ideas. So you allocate delegates in primary states just based on straw poll count, but in caucus states, that's not the case. There's a fraction of Liberty people that participated in the system in a state like Minnesota or Iowa, or you can look at Washington, Oregon, New Hampshire, Colorado to a lesser extent, states that did very well. And the reasons why they did well is because of the fact that there were good networks in place, good regional directors in place in congressional districts primarily, that put everyone together, and they established communication networks essentially. So, as we were going through the process, we knew, pretty much everyone else who was liberty oriented, and we communicated with each other through various stages of the caucus process.
Yeah, but like all of us were very active last presidential election, and I don't really if any bystander just listening to this, they'd say, oh yeah, it's the money that brought you all in. No. Well, we all decided to be active first, and then we kind of found these little niches. But without the money behind the Ron Paul movement, we probably wouldn't have been through those stages that we went through to prep us and whatnot. And
no, yeah, that really enabled the organization.
Yes. Yeah, so, and that's where when people hear money and whatnot, they kind of just, their mind goes, all right, yeah, money buys whatever. But it was created the organization behind it that you could coalesce behind.
Yeah, but that's when you need to have the funds to be able to, it's much easier to organize efforts like this if you have paid employees.
But this was a presidential, and for a presidential, you need to have that organization. But for a local thing, you really wouldn't need the money that we had. It would just be someone that knows something that kind of like what we understand now. We could kind of organize the group and find people that are just want to be active that, coalesce into a larger movement and are able to guide other people. It kind of it's same principle as the I can't think of it right now, but
so essentially it's like networking.
Trickle down. It was a trickle up effect for the Ron Paul movement. I mean, it just kept spreading, and it's the same principle only in inverse for the trickle down. But it's it started, and we all kind of got behind. And it just ballooned from there. I don't see the money affecting what we did.
No,
but
no.
The early education we got and the early, I wouldn't even call it education. That's even a stretch. It was just kind of, we were clueless and we had something to follow as an example to go on. And And from that's why I said last time we were doing it, we showed the way of how to really take control of the Minnesota caucus system with a very few. We had large numbers, but we had enough to coalesce behind a group, and we did very well in Minnesota. And I think that is going to hurt us for in the long term by showing other people how to do it, because we're talking about the Liberty Movement going forward. We felt very strongly, passionately. We did very well in Minnesota, but then now all of a sudden we're kind of floundering in a sense. And where do we go from here? And I think that any group, anyone that ever becomes active goes through exactly what we're going through, because most people do well, and that's what makes them, by doing, feel like you're accomplishing something, makes you stay active. And okay. But I don't know if I'm making any sense, but we're at a time where we're kind of searching for new things to be successful with, but there's the people not out there. Maybe it's just a midterm election that's the odd time of the year too. So,
okay. Oh, can I interject something?
Yep.
Yeah. By all means.
Okay. 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 So this is, and I'm really hesitant to be completely upfront with what's my thought process is, just because this is recorded and who knows who will hear this. But so what we're involved in is a political movement predominantly, right? Like, you could say it's a social movement, and it's an ideological movement, or I don't know, you could say it's other things too, but what it is predominantly, right, is like a political movement. And this is just, I don't know, I've been personally just kind of frustrated, or I don't know, cynical about the whole process lately. And so I'm just going to throw this out as a question, is, do you think, and I know we've had this discussion a bunch of times, but what do you think is the correct strategy for advancing this political movement? Is it the Republican Party? Is it the Libertarian Party? Is it something else? I personally have been kind of thinking that that we should almost, the focus, this is, I'll just add my own personal opinion, and then I'll ask for your guys' thoughts on it. But I recently have kind of been thinking that, it's should be, in terms of the way we should organize, and when we're talking about how we should organize this network of different liberty activists, is that, right now we have these different libertarian groups and things and different libertarian candidates, but the trend is continually, expansion of government, growth of government, loss of liberties, et cetera. So I think, and this is my own personal opinion, is that the way to organize is to have some sort of apolitical group. So maybe it's Campaign for Liberty, I don't know, but you have just kind of a apolitical group that is, supports, that articulates in a clear but kind of in a fairly clear way, some very basic principles that a lot of people, I think, can support. So that being individual rights and liberty, legal equality, free markets, non-interventionist foreign policy, four or five key points that a lot of people, whether they be Libertarian Party, Republican, libertarians, constitutionalists, Tea Party, maybe you could even probably get Occupy people for something, a lot of different people could agree with either portions or the entire thing. I think that's sort of where my head has been as to how to organize, because I'll be honest, I've been starting to question whether the Republican Party is the answer, whether the Libertarian Party is the answer, whether there's some other answer. So I'm kind of interested to hear what your guys' thoughts are on that.
I love that. I mean, it's so, I think what the majority of the Liberty people feel is it's hard to join either the two-party system. I think both parties, lead towards bigger government right now. We haven't seen true liberty mindset. And Ron Paul is the best example. And what do they to him? It's both parties harp on them. They use them when it's beneficial. They rag on them when it's, you know, towards the party benefit. And then the media just ignores them. And it's, you know, Republicans say, oh, the media is all, you know, liberals. Liberals say, the Republicans have all the money and whatnot. And, you know, it's just self-serving. It's something that I thought of at, I did not watch the State of the Union address, but I listened to it on a podcast the other day and just yesterday, and it damn near killed me. But the,
here, yeah.
Obama talks about himself all the time. I did this, I did that. The media and the Democrats constantly harped on everything's Bush, this and that. And the Republicans, when it was Clinton's term, always said it was Clinton this, Clinton that. And it's create that persona of the president has all this control. It's always the president. It's not the either party system. Because when you look at the Congress, it has the least amount of popularity for the last 20 years. It seems to only keep going down. And people do not trust the two-party system right now, and there's nothing to back it up. There's no other third option, that's why I say I love what you say, Lydia. That it's, you know, there's I battled through the whole thing. I'm debating on even caucusing for, you know, this time around. It's tough.
I guess this is my sort of thought process is that I agree with what you're saying. The more I think about it, I really think that the way to really have an impact is to be a political organization, but an apolitical organization, a nonpartisan organization, like really, really emphasizing that. Because within that group, within that organization, you can have people who are pursuing what they think through the political process is the best way to do that. But I think this is my own personal opinion, is that the structuring of the movement should be more ideological, influencing legislation, influencing policy, influencing thought, as opposed to influencing the political process, if that makes any sense. I don't really care if my senator is a Democrat, is a Republican, is an independent. I just care that they support four or five fundamental principles, basically. So I don't know. I've just been really, really kind of cynical about the whole political part, two-party system, I guess. In that I see so many people on both sides that I question whether they actually believe these policies that they support, or whether they believe them because they're, you know, they believe in a portion of the they agree with one issue, or maybe they don't even know what they believe or stand for, but because they support one side or the other, they just blindly are partisan to everything that supports a portion of just a frustration in people that don't seem to know what they believe in. I don't know.
Well, that's what we are. We are apolitical. But it's so what you're saying is, you know, how are we going to affect the political or any system? What's the best way to go about it? And, you know, maybe this is the best way to do it. Just have podcasts, get the information out there, people, you know, pay attention to. Because when I hear apolitical or whatnot, you're not involved in any of the political process in a way, I guess. It's how would we be?
Or just not, I guess, nonpartisan. Influential. I don't know if apolitical is the correct word.
Well, I know, but even if we're nonpartisan, we are nonpartisan and whatnot, but it's like, how can we be more influential? Because going through the political process has its limitations.
Go ahead, Kirk. Sorry, you weren't.
Well, I'm just trying to say, but yeah, I mean, yeah, it's great in principle, but how can it be effectual?
Okay, so like, I guess in like more of a concrete way, in terms of how you would apply it to maybe Liberty Southwest as a group or any sort of liberty-focused group, is I think you would have to cut out any sort of organization or you have to cut all political ties, basically. So whether you're involved in the Republican Party or the Libertarian Party, organizing and planning for those activities has to be completely cut out, because then you obviously have preferences to certain parties. So it really has to be more policy and legislation focused, I think. I think you have to focus on, you know, what's going on current. It's more current based on what's currently going on and applying, I guess, political pressure on things that violate your political principles.
Yeah, but how do we apply that pressure without being influential on any political parties or anything?
I can think of an organization that's doing that up, you know, at the top of my head, and that would be Campaign for Liberty. And they're really, they're focused. I mean, the focus of that organization is on legislative policy. It doesn't matter. Obviously, Republicans trend more towards, you know, towards their goals, but it's a nonpartisan philosophy. So, you know, there are organizations, and that's a prime example that are out there.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's something else to consider, and that's that there is benefit to still participating in the events that are at either party's level, because finding people who are like-minded, who are willing to put time and effort into
right. And process, I'm not saying that you should just not be involved. I'm not saying you shouldn't pursue whatever political party you most identify with and try and pull it more towards those liberty ideals. But I think that the primary structuring should be based on policy and ideas rather than political party. I'm just really on an anti-political party kick right now. So probably when I listen to this later, I'll think it's silly, but that's just sort of what my head is.
Lydia, me and you both battle that all the time.
I know. We're the most susceptible, Kirk. I know.
I used to be the biggest neocon ever, and it was hilarious. I would argue that to the day. I could argue it all day and night.
Oh, see, I had absolutely no interest and complete disgust for politics, and I'll be completely honest with you right now when I say that a couple days ago I was pretty tempted to just drop the whole thing and call that the political stage of my life and just be done with it, if I'm being completely honest with you. So,
well, it's like,
it's something I think we all struggle with. And I think it's something we all struggle with. And I was going to say, I have one more thing. It's something we all struggle with. And I've been talking to people here that of all sorts of political ideologies. And I think there's just a general consensus of frustration with politics and the political process. And I think you do yourself benefit when you actually stand for something on principles or ideology, as opposed to blindly a political party. I think you have more, I'm trying to think what the word would be.
Leverage?
Yeah, credibility or something that way.
Well, and I think this is becoming self-evident to anyone listening to this podcast that we, besides Matt that didn't want to go on, we all made it to state delegates. Mm-hmm. And we all went through the whole political caucus system in Minnesota 2 years ago, and we've seen it all. We've lived it through the Minnesota, through the national, and just see how the establishment stomps us out at every chance they can.
Oh, I think it's worth mentioning.
Absolutely true, and there was especially when you got to the Republican National Convention, there was a marked suppression of supporters there. And I think that made a lot of people who put a lot of effort in the process really upset, where they put time, money, and effort into getting where they wanted to ultimately get to, only to be completely ignored.
Exactly. And whose bus was it that got delayed by an hour by going on some off route?
Maine. Blackwell.
With the rules,
Virginia? Yeah, the rules committee, Virginia. Right when they were passing that, which is still being debated, I believe, or did that go through it recently? I don't remember, but I thought that that might have gone through in the last week or two. But
yeah, that was the Virginia delegation.
Well, no, I think it was the rules committee for the RNC.
Oh,
yeah, it was that whole rules committee thing where Morin was supposed to get to that meeting and the whole bus got delayed the whole hour when he was kind of the leading voice and kind of the liberty movement there that was very constitutional based, and they did not want him there at the time.
Yeah, and that's the nature of politics.
But Morin swears that that was coincidental, but everyone else looks at it differently.
I think, it's worth mentioning at this point that we've all made it to the highest level of the state party system with the Republican Party. You guys being state delegates, I was a state central delegate for midterm caucusing, and it's disenfranchising to have gotten to the point where we have and seen the people who we wanted to see get elected get kind of stomped out by essentially just big money candidates. And
I saw
just in the election process that we went through most recently, and I saw a situation where we ended up watching who I thought was an actually great candidate in Bill Paulson getting beaten out by somebody who's an establishment Republican who has a ton of money behind him, who doesn't have any new ideas, who said he was going to come in and, rescue the party from this huge deficit that they were in.
Go ahead.
No, by all means, interject.
Honestly, I after seeing kind of how at the last state central convention in which I was a seated alternate, I really have to say I wasn't wholly disappointed with how the Republican Party of Minnesota was being run. My primary frustration is that I am kind of, whether I'll be involved in any sort of political party is kind of my own personal choice, and I don't really know to what extent I will be doing that going forward, or at least in the near future. But I see the movement as being, I guess, more grassroots based. I see this as some sort of fusion of the Occupy movement, the Tea Party movement, or its own movement. I'm really kind of skeptical of the political process. I don't know. That's just currently where I've been at. But there's something else I was going to say, but I can't remember what it was. So, yeah.
Take this opportunity then to welcome Danny back.
Hello.
Danny. Of the three topics that you you had submitted to us, what's the one that you'd like to talk about tonight the most?
I'd like to actually, before we go to that point, allow Danny to chime in on. Danny, we're talking about the state of the liberty movement and kind of went through what we've gone through, collectively over the last couple of years. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, or
just kind of like, I'm guessing you guys are discussing, going forward type of thing. Like, where do you think going forward in 5 years, 10 years, the liberty movement, is that what you guys kind of talking about?
Well, essentially, Lydia had said that she believes it's going to be a grassroots involvement that's going to make it take off. We talked about how we've all been kind of the state level. We've been a little bit disenfranchised. We're not down on the Republican Party, but we're frustrated with the results that we saw out of it. And then
I don't even know if it's a disenfranchisement with the Republican Party. I think it's a disenfranchisement, for me personally at least, it's a disenfranchisement with the two-party system. And how it really is, I don't know. I see my frustration right now is just I see so many people that are, one side or the other, they're a Republican or a Democrat, and it's like I see so many people where it's like, are you really, pro-choice, or are you just pro-choice because you like these other policies? Are you really pro, you know, gun control, or are you just really, you agree with these other policies? Are you, you know, really in support of, you know, this foreign policy, or does it just fall in line with the political party you identify with? I don't know. That's been my key, I guess my primary just frustration lately. But we can move on to something else.
Let's talk about the major caucus.
I was going to say, if Danny wants to chime in, what his thoughts are.
I'd like to hear what Danny's comments are.
I'd like to hear Danny next Tuesday.
I'd like to hear Danny's comments.
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with Lydia. You know, what I'm thinking is, you know, with the Liberty Party, we don't have money. That's the thing. We don't have money to battle against, you know, the two evils. You know, the mainstream Republicans and the Democrats. You know, I think you know, you either, if you're really wealthy, rich person, you know, you're either a Democrat or you're a Republican. You know, Michael Bloomberg, Democrat, he's, you know, wealthy, and, you know, Mitt Romney and, you know, all his friends, Koch brothers, you know, those are the, you know, established Republicans, whatever. So, you know, for Liberty, it's like we're always like, I see like we're always going to be the minority. It's always going to be like we're the outcasts. So,
see,
that's kind of what I take.
Well,
I don't know. What do you guys say?
Well, you talk about money. It's like, say you want to buy influence. If there's two-party system, what better way to buy influence than a two-party system? You got two people. Most people, mainly the rich, either lean one way or either both, and they just whatever floats at, you know, at the time being, if you need influence or not. But with how government grows, it's all regulation, this and that. It's more red tape. That, and obviously Obama proved in the State of the Union speech that that government controls what's going on, and I'm going to release red tape to free here and there, and it's going to be his friends that do it. He's proven it through the green sector, through his first term and whatnot, and it's, I mean, Democrats have far more control over that than anyone else, and that's, it's, you know,
well, and I just
loosen
and
the regulations here and there for what we, but if you think the way, the best thing on the State of the Union was the whole preschool thing, Obama's push for preschool, where he's like, it's not what you know to fill in the correct oval, it's how you think. No, that's why they wanted to do the preschool thing, it's all about controlling the way we think and creating us into this certain situation. But
what's that?
What was that? I just got logged out.
I'm in the library. Sorry, they're closing in half hour.
You're talking too loud, Lydia.
Oh. I thought that was the timer for Kirk Pettis.
Yeah, talking too long.
Yeah, sorry, Kirk, you're off the stage. Yeah,
we do need a timer. It's like a
I think that is the communist.
That was pretty good.
The communists
my reason for wanting to make this nonpartisan is that I think, you know, so many people, no matter what, I'm exposed to a lot of liberals where I'm living currently. So I have taken a different mindset maybe in terms of how I approach this. But
it's good.
But I think so many people are frustrated with the political process. You know, the approval rating of Congress is abysmal. And most people you ask to say, oh, it's the Democrats' fault, it's the Republicans' fault. You know, it's whoever you're against, it's their fault. And I think those frustrations with the partisanness, the partisanship, the frustration with just the political process is only going to grow, because as government expands and as it becomes, you know, as it becomes more involved in increasing areas of our lives, more and more things just become political. And that's just my opinion, is that the frustration people have with the political process is inherently kind of linked to the expansion of government. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, but I think Danny brought up a good point, and that's an interesting, you know, it's something I've thought about in the past, is the liberty movement does not have a lot of financial resources at collective disposal. We've seen what happens when you get a bunch of passionate people together and you can organize and get results. But to me, it's an interesting, exercise to think, how do you grow it? Because within politics, money dictates victory.
Didn't Ron Paul make more money in one day than any other politician?
He did money bomb. All donations. Yep, he did.
I mean, there's money out there. The people are out there.
That's where I get the grassroots inclination, I guess.
But it's like we're in the wrong sphere. And I think that's what Ron Paul determined to do. I mean, since he quit Congress, he couldn't talk about any policy or other congressional people for the last year. Now he's back talking to, he has more liberties back, I guess I should say. But it's like the Republican Party. I love how the Democrats always say the Republicans are the party of the rich. I know more rich Democrats than anything.
Yeah, and Democrats, once you get over $200,000 household income, it's...
By the party donations. The party donations. Democrats are large towards the max, and the Republicans are more $20 to $100 level than anything else. And that shows same thing with Ron Paul money bomb. That was all probably $5 to $50 donations. And the money came in a landslide. So It's making people think there's something to coalesce behind. Ron Paul, there was something. He ran in 08. It was obvious he got shunned then too. And it just grew the following. But now we're coming to the next, election cycle, and we don't have a Ron Paul type to...
Oh, there are people. Justin Amash, Thomas Massey. I mean, there are, analogs within the U.S. House that... at least at a regional level, garner comparable support.
Well, and that affects to our argument against the establishment and how they kind of shun these people. They preach conservatism and this and that, but yet when it's on the forefront, they kind of try and push that to the background as extremists led by the Republican Party.
Well, what motivation do they have to behave any other way?
Well, it's kind of the precept of an organization as a whole, and that's kind of why all libertarians kind of argue against this set organizational setup. But and it goes back to Lydia's point, what is the best effectual way to fight this kind of stuff? And it is the grassroots apolitical organizations, but how can we be effective through those means?
Maybe good question. I think we could probably talk about this for a couple more hours, but...
I was going to say, in the next five minutes, I have to be off this computer.
Just the whole fact of what we're doing right now. Just talking about it, trying to get other people that agree with anything we're saying and share it with friends and get the whole message out there. And I think that's social networking is the way of the future, and it's the way...
Now we're going into a topic that I want to talk about, but I only have 5 minutes.
Walk and talk.
Okay, can I throw out a future meeting or future? I guess these are podcasts. Apparently, future podcast topic.
Let's do this instead. How about you send out an email to us? And what I'd like to do
here,
instead
I
is
I
want to
throw it out on the podcast so people can get excited about it. If anyone wants,
I want to hear Lydia. All right.
Okay. I would like to have a future meeting topic about the internet and the libertarian movement, because I think those are closely related, and I see that as, in addition to kind of, grassroots organization, I see the internet as a very significant tool in promoting and spreading the message of liberty. So I would like to have that be either a partial or full meeting topic.
I think we can all agree with that. That's no problem.
I think that'd be a great topic next time.
What I would like to do now is I'd like to thank everybody for listening to us tonight. What? I would.
Are you calling it quits now?
Calling it quits already? I think
I'm not calling it quits.
Start walking and come back in the conversation. This is
well, this is my question. Is that I have Skype on my phone, and I don't know if that works for group things.
Yeah, absolutely, it does.
I'm on my phone, so is Danny.
Yeah. Oh. It doesn't cost money, does it?
No.
No.
Okay. Oh, it's megabucks. Your next bill is going to be like $300, buddy.
The only thing that costs money on Skype is if you call a phone number.
And it's actually it's exponentially more expensive the more people you're talking to at the same time.
Yeah, there you go. Times five.
All right, let's rack up the
okay,
bill.
Well, you guys are welcome to continue.
This up? I mean, I think it's there was a couple. We haven't covered very many.
Let's go 15 more. Wrap up in 15. What do you guys think about that?
That's fine. We can keep going.
Hold on. I have to log off. You guys are welcome to continue.
Lydia, try to get back on your phone.
I am in a public location and it closes in 13 minutes or 23 minutes. But I have to. Yeah, I have a psychology test in the morning. So
Lydia, it's been a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Likewise, I have a feeling some of my more Republican Party friends, if they ever listen to this, are going to give me a hard time because I don't know. But
way to go.
I didn't. Okay, first of all, I didn't know this was going to be recorded. Second of all, well, whatever. yeah, I'm going to be logging off. But let me know when the next one of these things is. I hope I didn't make too much of a fool myself on this.
Lydia,
thing.
just a disclaimer: what I just said in the last hour has nothing to do with my future self.
Can we use that as just a personal disclaimer for Kirk and I forever?
This is eternal.
I reserve the rights to change my opinion.
Yes.
When presented with more convincing and compelling.
But I've just been so politically kind of, I don't know, cynical, I guess is the only word lately. So I have a feeling those who are probably more savvy than I am are going to give me a hard time. But oh well. So I'm logging off. Have a good evening, all of you. And yeah, we'll see where this goes.
Hi, Lydia.
All right,
okay.
Yeah.
Lydia.
Yeah. Hey, the NSA is probably listening to us right now.
Yeah, and I'll just say a quick hello to the NSA too while we're at it. Yeah. All right. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Love and test.
Yeah, I have a concept to think about if you guys are interested at all.
What's your concept?
Well, you know how, I don't know how many business classes you guys all took, but it's like on average 10% of businesses make it through the first year, and it's like 10% of that make it through another 10 years. And who has more self-interest in succeeding than someone starting their own business? Right. And if only 10% succeed, yet government implements, we all elect politicians every 2 years, every 4 years, every 6 years. And the ideas and whatnot, yet when does any government program or anything fail? And it really should, in my knowledge, that if it were like 10% make it, come on, really? We can't drop any government programs. And then people argue about, oh, we got to raise taxes here and there. It affects people's business plans and that. But anytime we try and to sequester, anytime we try and limit this government expansion, all hell breaks loose. And it's, I just feel like, you know what? Let's let politicians throw out these ideas, but let's let only 10% succeed. And go from there.
So how do you do
just
that?
Just kind of follow the business, the real world. What do you guys think of that?
But how do you do that?
Well, it'd just be like what we're talking about now. Just get that perspective out there. If you're going to sit down and start a business, and the amount of work that goes into that and the rewards and the risk you do, and the same thing goes into government. And yet anything that fails in the government is perpetrated by, oh, we just need more money. We just need more on this and that. And it's kind of, reflecting on the business world too, about who fails and succeeds at the same time, where a lot of people fail constantly, and you know, and certain business practices can succeed in certain ways. And I don't see how government can't be effectual at the same time, where we need to view that, yes, certain government policies need to fail.
I think you just answered question. I think you just answered your own question there. You know, yeah, like even if these like government policies and new regulations fail, you know, they'll just get more money. They can just print more money and then, you know, fund it and, you know, do whatever they need to keep on pushing their agenda. You know, well, I think there's a fundamental difference. I kind of understand what you're trying to say here. You know, if businesses fail, why can't, you know, certain policies of the government fail? Well, they just won't allow it, I guess. You know, while they will allow businesses to fail, because, you know, if you don't make your ends meet, you know, no, the IRS ain't going to help you. The government ain't going to help fund you. Yeah, you know, but, you know, if one of the departments, you know, Department of, you know, Revenue or something within the government fails, you know, they'll have like another government sector to just jump right in to, you know, help them out, you know. So
I kind of put it as an argument against a two-party system as well, that, you know, it's because the party system comes up with these ideas instead of the individual or whatnot. In a sense, sometimes a political party tries to pin it on the individual, but most of the time it is the political process through the party system that creates these programs and whatnot that, you know, it's an embarrassment. They can't let things fail. And right. So by not having the political organization, just debating on concepts and whatnot, that it tends towards, you know, getting towards the real reality behind it instead of the organizational, we can't let us be embarrassed or defeated and we have to win at all costs.
But I don't know, I just kind of see it hard to change that, you know.
No, well, that's because we've been kind of herded into this mentality.
Right.
It's, you know, it's kind of hard to unherd the sheeple out there, but it's worth debating and talking about it, is yeah, what I was, no, why I brought it up. But
no, I agree. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to promote, you know, taking Social Security away, you know, people are, there's going to be a lot of fighting words back at you. So,
well, I mean, that's, I could argue that all day, but I mean, it's, that was a specific idea that should have failed, because there's been right. plenty of better ideas out there that could replace that. And yet we know we have to continue Social Security because
we'll fall out. I think it's worth saying that every single political or government program that's ever been created has followed that exact same format. Regardless of how crappy they are, they continue to function at their full steam. And they often increase their budget. They don't they don't go away. They get worse.
Yeah, very difficult once you have a government organization that's in place to get rid of them. They have a vested interest in building the amount of people that they have underneath them. And you start to get into it becomes kind of a political fight for the leaders of that organization to grow themselves. And they barely get, you know, shut down or shrink in size.
Well, and you know what, Dave, part of the advantage that they have over the politicians who come in and try to make a difference is they've been doing it for 10, 15, 20 years, whereas this elected official is only coming in after, you know, it's their first year. It's year one. They want to make a difference. Well, this guy has been fighting this fight. The established organization's been fighting
bureaucrat,
this fight with
right.
yeah with a year one politician for 20 years. He knows how to shut him up in 10 minutes. He can get him out the door. He doesn't even have to try anymore.
Well, so, but that's the experience. But really, what are politicians? They are not the true leaders of movements that you want to portray. It's, you know, they mostly are followers. They stick their finger to the wind and go with, you know, whichever direction the wind's going. But it's, I mean, that's what it's hard to argue that, because that's exactly what Obama's doing. He's trying to say he's going to dictate exactly what he's going to do by his latest or every State of the Union address he's done. But it's why I brought that up is exactly what you guys said, is that it's not it's a new for new politicians running out there is, hey, you know, businesses fail all the time. Why can't government fail? To get that idea set in people's minds of, you know what, government programs should fail and can fail, or it can fail and actually should fail at time to time, versus this whole constant tread that once it started, it perpetuates for eternity.
That's hard to do, though.
Yeah. But the only way to battle it goes back to exactly what Lydia says. It's grassroots, apolitical, and just get that mindset in people, and the politicians will have to follow suit once that mindset's imprinted in people. And I think that's why podcasts like this can be the most influential things out there. But that's my opinion. Only, you know, who knows? Maybe I have no idea what the percentage, but I would only assume that 5% of the population listens to podcasts right now. But I think that's going to continually grow. So
I think that's beside the point. I think you've got tons of different mediums, and I think that's going to tie into what Lydia brought up, and that's the internet and the future of the movement. And I think we can talk about that way more in depth coming up here in the future. I certainly have a lot to say about that.
I think we all do. Should we do one more?
I'd like to talk about one of the topics that Danny had brought up.
Danny, choose something and let's talk about it.
Honestly, those are just some ideas to think of. You know, I was looking at the list that Eric and Matt, you know, put together, and, you know, I was just kind of, you know, filling the blanks. Well, what did they not include? Well, they didn't include the State of Union address, the Obamacare, and tapering of the quantitative easing. So I don't really have much to talk about with these topics. I mean, I can raise like
we all do. So you can just choose one. And
yeah, sure.
I think we should just talk for another 4 hours. I'm ready to roll.
we're just going to make this into the first bring it four on. Episodes. Let's go. All right, hang on. Give me a second here. Everybody be quiet. Everybody be quiet for a moment. Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 2.
We could.
I just shut down all my previous emails saying that, yeah, we should keep this to a half hour.
So one of the, just throw out one of the three. We'll talk about it for 10 minutes up.
Yeah, well, we can maybe talk about you know, the tapering of the quantitative easing. I forget what the full figure is, but I think the next Fed discussion is that they're thinking about dropping their spending for about $10 billion a month, I believe.
I think that's 65. Is that what that is?
Yes, or 85 to 75. Yeah, or something like that. So, yeah, you know. I don't know if you guys kind of follow the markets a little bit, and obviously it's, you know, following a stock market is something of interest to me, but, you know, the past 3 days, except with the exception today, it rallied a little bit, but like the past 3 days, it kind of, you know, the market took a hit from that. So, you know, I thought it was kind of fascinating, you know, how Wall Street just, you know, Wall Street and all these, you know, financial institutions, all these, a lot of these businesses that, you know, relies on, you know, a lot of this, these Fed money somehow, you know, just because it goes down $10 billion, you know, the stock market hits because, you know, Wall Street doesn't get this money to fund themselves and, you know, have their big parties in investing, you know, all sorts of, you know, you guys know where I'm going with this, you know, because you know, all this money that they're spending doesn't go to people like us. It all goes to Wall Street so they can, you know, play the stock game.
Right.
You know, things
My opinion.
So.
Yeah, very closely that, relates to Peter Schiff.
Real quick,
it ain't gonna happen.
Before you go on that, Kirk. So this is from $75 to $65 billion a month.
Okay, 75.
And Danny, isn't that mostly used to buy mortgage-backed securities to prop up the housing market at this point?
I believe so. All I know is that, well. Yeah, I forget what the details is.
Because we've seen the housing market over the last year and a half. A lot of prices, like even in this area, have gone up by about 20%.
I do know that, you know, a lot of these institutions like Blackstone, they get, you know, they probably got some money out of it, but they were like buying a lot of these properties as well. Blackstone. I think Blackstone.
Isn't that a military organization?
Never heard of it, but I believe Blackstone is here. Let me see. My mother was talking about it like a few months ago. So
I thought Blackstone was a military contracting group that's like primarily used over in the Middle East.
Blackstone Group.
Wall Street investment company.
Yep. Yeah, they heavily invested
in mortgage.
Are they seeing any of this quantitative easing coming their way? I mean, have we seen where the numbers are going to? And I mean, this quantitative easing just seems to be all computer formulated numbers. I just don't see that coming. And I think they're purposely keeping it out of currency
and just propping up. It's used to buy assets, essentially.
Well, if it's mortgage-backed securities, I think it's just buying up bad debt.
Oh, it's buying debt.
It's buying debt. Period. It's to enable
through the Fed and through the. Hang on, though.
It's to enable the smaller banks to continue to loan out against the total amount of asset that they have available. It's the central banks purchase up the debt. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's bad or not, but they're purchasing it, and that's the purpose of quantitative easing. You know, the central bank purchasing the debt that's already on the smaller banks, and that allows the smaller banks to continue to loan more money
and to push up the which was the primary driver of the crash in 2009.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what the focus is, because that market has been so damaged.
All this debt has collateral. What collateral is being put up against this, and is the Fed gaining collateral? It's from all these quantitative easings, or are they just pumping it for free? What does this entail? I've heard conspiracies out there where it's they're buying all these mortgage-backed securities that are backed by all these loans that have real value, real land for these mortgages, and they're buying up all these bad debts. So if the economy crashes, who sits on all this land all of a sudden?
Well, the Federal Reserve does.
Right. The central banks do.
And so this could be a banking queue going on. Well,
they own the property. If you default, they own the mortgage backed securities. So the collateral is the actual real estate.
Could be a 15-20 year plan being enacted right in front of our eyes.
That is a conspiratorial angle, but yeah, it certainly could be.
But that's my whole point. All this quantitative easing is going somewhere, and some's being returned for it. And yet most of the details are pretty vague. And so if the Fed's really coming up with all these collateral towards all this land in the United States, when the Fed isn't even a federal agency, it's an outside private institution that works with our federal government.
Well, you know,
this is a coup waiting to happen right now.
Well, I want to mention Thomas Jefferson's quote, and I'll read it here. I looked it up. So it's, I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. And that's the entire argument of this philosophy of quantitative easing is looking at a bank that is essentially buying up property. They're going to own all of the states based on just debt purchasing.
Well, they're the lender of last resort. You foreclose, the Federal Reserve owns the property. So
be right back.
Is that I thought that was Lydia walking and talking.
Yeah, But what they're, you know, in my opinion, what they're really trying to do is, you know, the largest market is real estate. And they're using that as a vehicle to prop up a economy that is very sick. And, you know, now they're using indicators that say unemployment is going down, economic growth is increasing, and they're saying, we see these numbers, so we're going to start reducing the amount of mortgage-backed securities that we purchase. You know, whether
but all those values are bullshit.
They are.
Yeah. They're all bullshit. The real unemployment's like damn near 30% right now.
Which, but, you know, that's huge. There's you're talking about a situation where it's the worst case scenario for what Thomas Jefferson predicted in 1809. I mean, we're talking hundreds of years ago. This guy was sharp enough to see what a central bank would try to do, and it's shocking to me how much of a lack there's been in just a recognition by the general population of how impactful this situation
is.
It's
not shocking to me at
all. Don't understand economics.
Think of when the Federal Reserve was enacted. Damn near, it was 100 years ago now.
1913.
Yes, 100 years ago, by a month now, and it's and what just passed, the healthcare Affordable Care Act. I really believe that the Affordable Care Act is damn near as close to enacting the Federal Reserve as damaging to the United States. And both things are going to, and we're going to look back at this time and be like, how the hell did our public be that asleep that allowed the government to take over healthcare? Just like 100 years ago, our government was that asleep, our public was that asleep that allowed the Federal Reserve to be enacted, and then the IRS as the controlling arm of it. But it's a damn shame.
So Danny, what do you think about QE? What do you think?
What do I think?
I mean, do you think they'll continue reducing? Is it effective? Or
I think they'll try to keep on reducing. You know, I really hope they do too. So
all right. I guess I didn't hear. They said they are specifically lowering it by $10 billion.
Yeah, 75 to 65, and the markets act.
And so that's why the markets have been going down.
What's that?
So that's pretty much why the markets have been going down, because
it's
like people like Peter Schiff say that's the only thing propping up the market at the same time is this quantitative easing that has been making it improve the last few years. But yeah,
more money in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's why I want to say, where exactly is this quantitative easing money going, and where is it flowing to and from? It's this whole mortgage-backed securities, I mean, how many trillions are out there that need to be buyed up? I mean,
well, that's why we need to audit the Fed. That is the fundamental crux of the situation, is we have no idea what the actual impact of these monetary policies of this semi-government entity have been over the last decades. The need to audit the Fed and understand what they've done financially to this nation has never been greater.
It's never going to see the light of day.
No,
just like anything, it's going to be confidential is what it'll be. You'll see hearings that will be for a public show, and anything confidential will be behind closed doors. And then you'll see all these interviews by people on the mainstream media that all have taken oaths to never reveal anything confidential, and they'll never even admit to anything that is even thrown out there that's outside of the public, the government memes out there.
We need a Snowden, but from the Federal Reserve. I think that's what we need.
Yeah, those guys are.
Well,
I think there's anybody who is within that system and
has been. No, we have. We have.
That will do it.
We've had plenty.
I guess there have been whistleblowers, haven't there? It doesn't.
I guess.
Yeah, there's been plenty of people against the Fed that have been involved in it, but it's just hush hush. It just never sees the light of day. If people want to find it, it's there. But it goes back to the whole political two-party system that both refuse to go there. And that's where, you know, why people like us have a hard time to even get involved anymore. But, you know, but it'd be a great way to finish and talk about how this caucus system in Minnesota is happening next Tuesday.
Do you want to do that for a little bit and then call it?
Yeah, let's call it. Yeah, I agree.
I could talk for hours right now, but
so we want to touch on caucus for a little bit and then call it.
Yeah,
let's do that. Let's. Okay. So what do we want to say about the caucus, Kirk?
Well, I've been going back and forth to doing it. I you know, there's only personal reasons to go and still be involved. I guess, you know, I like being involved, and it's you know, I have my differences with the Republican Party. It's overall, it's the party that closely relates to myself that's of the two-party system. So it's I learned so much 2 years ago that it was a fun time, but it's a lot of work at the same time, and I just don't know if it's totally worth going around this time. But I did go and change my license today finally so I actually can caucus since I did move. So.
Was that the reason why you changed your license, or?
Pretty much, yeah.
Just on the up and up when you go in there and you're it's the actual address.
I just never knew how long I'd stay here. I'm like, all right, I'm committed to being here for a while, so.
So I'm newly
my license, but you know, well, actually, and to be able to golf at Chaska.
Because that's Chaska probably the bigger drop.
Give me a hard time for not having a license, even though
you better get me a discounted round there, buddy.
At the Chad at town course.
Yeah, no, what a great course, okay. Link style. Oh yeah. So as far as the
troubles they gave me, they made me see all my receipts. Oh, once you get your ID, I'm like, I have witnesses. I have people backing me up. I live in Chaska.
So I'm debating on whether or not I'm going to go to the SD33 convention. I mean, I live totally in SD33 at this point. Jerry Hertas is my senator. I've got, you know, Cindy Pugh is still my congresswoman, and Dave Osmick, you know, obviously he's very close by. So the SD33 convention, I'm planning on going to it. I still want to stay in touch with these people. I know that there's enough enough benefit for just keeping the relationship there. I personally regret not being involved more at this point with the process in this area. Only if for the reason that I've heard a lot about how incestuous this area has been, and I'd like to see I'd like to actually have some influence here.
I heard a lot from Melissa back in the day about that, and yeah, SC33 is very very contentious.
It's a top. Well, they try to keep it as top.
Well, it took 2 years for me to gain the amount of influence. Danny, I don't know. You got something going on there?
I'm listening.
Moving something. Like it's. Your microphone's picking
up.
Are
you scratching your face?
Okay. I was moving my thumbs around, so maybe
okay.
I'll stop.
No, it's, all right.
It's beat mix.
Yeah, there you go. So essentially, I'm not sure. I want to have the influence. It took me 2 years to get a good amount of influence within the Carver County GOP. I honestly think that it benefited our organization in the long run to have those friendships established before the libertarian movement came into the picture. I had already been at a lot of meetings. The GOP, the Carver County GOP, already knew me as being somebody who was a Republican. I was there as an active member. I think it's going to be harder for me to quote unquote infiltrate. And I don't really even mean it that way. I think it's going to be hard to participate as an effective member in the SD33 caucuses just because I've been outside of it. The ability to come into this new situation is going to be hampered only because I don't have the time to put into it that I did with the Carver County GOP. I think putting time in really does have a huge influence, and I think participating at the caucus level, I think that's the very beginning. And then after that, if you don't participate, you grow the organizations start to actually have some animosity that forms because you're there and you're participating in the caucus and you're voting and you have this influence, but you're not participating at any other level. So you have people at the executive board level and the other volunteers who look at you as being just somebody who's only there for the time being, and they don't consider you influential. And like I was saying before, I think of the organization right now, and I'd like to have at least enough of a soapbox to be able to stand up and influence more people to come to the libertarian side, to influence people to come to want to participate in the type of forums and discussions that we hold versus what the Republican Party holds.
And I think it's important for people who have that view and who are strong in their convictions and they're educated in their, you know, in their general view set to participate in the process. You know, and it doesn't really even matter which party it's in, but to, you know, to convey the ideas of the libertarian movement,
right?
To me, it's an easy message to understand, and it's even easier. You know, it seems it's a bit more difficult when you get into the older demographic, but in the younger demographic, it's very easy to understand. So, you know, by taking an hour and a half to caucus, it can be positive. Plus, you can network and meet more like-minded individuals, even though it seems like it's a smaller percentage. But
well, that's how we all gained, became friends. You know.
Yep.
I mean, I would have never met you guys without caucusing. So.
Yep.
So I think there's no arguing. There's definitely a benefit for going to the caucus.
And yeah, and that's kind of something we could look at too, because I actually went out there and actually pursued meeting other people, mm-hmm. instead of just going there in my own preset ways and this and that, just get in and out for my own self. I want this idea. I put in a debate about the RNC or whatnot, like a lot of people do. I mean, just witnessing the whole thing, a lot of people go there just for the first time to input ideas that they think the RNC establishment should, the principles of the party. And it's just interesting to see how the whole process works. And I loved it. And that's why I keep wanting to go back and do it. But right now, it's like Lydia says, I battle at how effectual it will be or whatnot. And, but at the same time, it's fun to be part of an organization, even though it bugs me to see an organization and only be self-serving all the time.
All right, gentlemen, I am going to have to say we have to wrap this up. We've been going for an hour and a half at this point.
Is that it?
Like,
I'd say 2 hours and 6 minutes, but
yeah, I think like, what is it? 9,
I'm just
10?
Saying from when we started our recording here. I would like to thank everybody who's listening to this this pontification of opinion from a bunch of disorganized libertarians. I'd like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to this this podcast here, and I think you've got a lot to look forward to with our future podcasts. We'll polish this up quite well. I earnestly believe that, and I'd personally like to thank Eric and Danny and Lydia, since you're not here anymore, but I'd like to thank all of you guys for joining tonight. And
yeah, Kirk, you're thanked too.